We're back with another edition of the Federalist Radio Hour. I'm Emily Jashinsky, culture editor here at the Federalist. As always, you can email the show at radio@thefederalist.com. Follow us on Twitter at FDRLST. Make sure to subscribe wherever you download your podcasts as well. You'll notice I said subscribe in a sort of slurred way, and that's because it was intentional. I was mocking our president. Joined today by Christopher Bedford here on the podcast, senior editor at the Federalist, also co-founder over at RightForge. Chris, that was not me slurring my words for any reason other than that I was just trying to sound like Joe Biden.
Yeah, I actually didn't hear you slurring because that was much more subtle than the mental decline that we're witnessing in the president right now, who's basically got a brain that's been made out of mashed potatoes at this point, can barely keep up. I mean,
it's hard to watch.
So I guess the corporate media has decided to sacrifice him. Mm-hmm. He's done. He's no longer useful. The man who they created is no longer useful to them.
Well, and that's what we were actually going to talk about is an article that Chris wrote, an argument that Chris mounted, which is basically never forget the people who sicked Joe Biden on us, the people who made it so that Joe Biden became the president of the United States in all of his, and I mean this sincerely, tragic senility. It is deeply unpleasant to watch this play out on a national level. It's horrible. It makes me completely uncomfortable. Sometimes I have the urge to laugh because I'm so uncomfortable, but it is genuinely distressing. He's the leader of the free world, and his mumbling and stumbling and senility to the point where he doesn't seem to know where he is, he doesn't seem to have a grasp of reality of the issues, is not only deeply embarrassing, but it's distressing. Completely. Who's making the decisions?
So you can tell that they're really turning on him. And some folks are saying, oh, wow, they're willing to report this. But that's not it. It's just that the gloves are off now. He's no longer useful to them. He's now a danger to them. So the puppet that they put in charge is someone that they're going to try and remove. The example I laid out was the New York Times Sunday, Monday, and Tuesday. On Sunday, just below the fold on the front page, they had an article that was about the trip to Europe being postponed because of him being exhausted and being unable to do it. How aides had to move cords out of the way so he wouldn't trip. How it was difficult. But it was funny. The article was like it was breaking a habit. It still had so much garbage in it. Like they actually said he's not remotely as senile as Donald Trump was in office. What?
Right,
That's ridiculous. Have you seen Donald Trump this past week? Just rattling off facts and entertaining the crowd and just running things? Like, there's no comparison. And they said, well, it's not nearly as senile as Reagan was, according to, like, one or two biographers who are contested significantly at the end of his office, his time in office. And the second article that came out was one that said, the Democrats don't want him to run again. It was based on a New York Times poll. This is Monday, front page, headline, above the fold article, saying the majority of Democrats do not want him to run for a second term. And he's actually so senile, he screwed that up. He yelled at the reporter this week by saying, when they asked him about it, and he said, have you seen the polls, Jack? More people want me to run. It's like, no, it's the opposite. It's the opposite of that.
No, it really is.
I do like Jack, though. I used to call people Jack sometimes in the 50s, 60s.
Jack.
Listen, Jack. And then the third one that came out was one of their opinion columnists, who, of course, you know, was originally tepid because she was more left-wing than him, but has since become a steady supporter of Joe Biden, came out and said he's too old to be president again, to run again. So that's a three punches thrown in a row at Joe Biden. And we have to remember, like, okay, so where did Joe Biden come from? Because the Democratic primary, Barack Obama didn't want him. He was like the last person to back him, basically.
Mm-hmm.
Working behind the scenes, David Axelrod, who like I don't really think attacks former colleagues of Barack Obama without Barack Obama's permission, was going at him hard during the primary season. But everyone's looking at this: the media, the Democratic poobahs, Oprah Winfrey, whoever else makes these decisions, and saying, "Hold on a second, the most of the stage here, the Democratic primaries are either like Kamala Harris, who literally came in last, to the Democratic voters' credit, or they're just left-wing lunatics who want to decriminalize the border, open the border, and are openly saying on the stage, yes, I will come for your AR-15s. Like, these people aren't tenable. They can't run. So maybe we should go with the senile person, who, even though he's pretty radical on his policies, in general, he's got like a fake reputation for being a moderate, is much more palatable to a lot of the American people. So they just know him. He's kind of grandfatherly. And, like, you know, there he was comforting people at funerals, et cetera, et cetera. People kind of liked him. But it was obvious, because I was on the campaign trail in Iowa and in New Hampshire, that this guy was losing it. He'd been in the spotlight. This November is going to be the 50-year anniversary of the first national-level election that he won. We know what this guy looks like on camera. We know what he talks like. We know how he fights. Even the Clarence Thomas hearings, like, well, like, a lot of the things he said were cringeworthy dumb. He was sharp and quick and fast-moving. So to see this guy who sits there and alternates between growling, sinister whispers about the future and then yelling at the sky, like he didn't have an in-between, I'd watch him at his events, and I'd say, this guy's experiencing what we all recognize from our own friends and family, the advanced symptoms of aging. The New York Times knew this. So for them now to come out and CNN to come out and MSNBC to come out and say, whoa, 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 guys, this guy might be senile.
Right.
It's just so pathetic.
Right.
I feel like it's the end of Mice and Men. I was actually giggling thinking about this when I saw the opening line of that New York Times op-ed. I can't help feeling sorry for Joe Biden. It's like, what are you, George, taking Lenny down to the river and telling him to pet the bunny?
Oh,
like, go and look out at the river, and then you shoot him in the back of the head to put him out of his misery? I can't help but feel sorry for you. I'm like, yeah, but I mean, you were in charge. You created this.
And that's what I want to ask you about, because you just got into this a little bit. You were just talking about the New York Times and the Washington Post, who would have supported literally a non-sentient item over Donald Trump. Right.
For
like,
sure.
if you have a binary decision between Donald Trump and this empty can of Diet Coke.
This empty can of Diet Coke will heal the soul of the nation.
And you know what? No fat people will drink the Diet Coke. Or no skinny people.
Only, no skinny people drink Diet Coke. No, he actually drinks Diet
drinks
Coke.
He drinks Diet Coke.
He didn't used to.
Okay. Okay. Noted. Well, he's on a health kick. But
well, he had to because he's not skinny.
Chris, you were just getting into this a little bit, but it is true that given a binary choice, the Washington Post would have endorsed this empty Diet Coke, period, over Donald Trump. But I want to see if you can flesh out this argument more, because I think a lot of this actually goes back to the primary. And a lot of it goes back to the cover I think the media gave Joe Biden over the course of the primary. Yeah. So talk a little bit more about what you mean when you say basically the national political establishment shouldn't be forgiven for foisting a senile Joe Biden, knowingly foisting a senile Joe Biden on the country.
He lost the Iowa primary to Pete Buttigieg and Elizabeth Warren. Like, Elizabeth Warren is someone whose political clarion call echoes all the way from Boston to, like, Harvard Square. Like, she won, beat him. He was fourth place in Iowa. In New Hampshire, he came in fifth place.
That's right.
It was unreal. I mean, Kamala Harris, his running mate, didn't even make it to Iowa. So by the time it got to South Carolina, everyone's looking at this being like, all of us, the Federalists, I remember explicitly, because Ben and I went down there, we were expecting, wondering if this was going to be the end of Joe Biden or if this was going to be his comeback. Now, it's important to recognize that no one has ever come back from this in modern Democratic politics except for Bill Clinton. And that was a very different time. That was a time when people didn't campaign in every single state the way they do. Bill Clinton was one of his primary opponents was from Iowa. He ceded that ground. He said, I'm not even going to fight there. And then he did so well in New Hampshire. He defied expectations and got that nickname, the comeback kid. And he was just a very savvy politician. So he was able to rally that and move it. And he created a narrative that was very different from Joe Biden, fourth place, fifth place. That's not a winning narrative. But the Democratic leaders in South Carolina and press started to realize by South Carolina, as it was a race to who could say the craziest thing, or Bernie Sanders, to be the Democratic nominee, that they did not want this, that this was going to be a disaster, that the ultimate goal was beating Donald Trump. So, to your point, a nearly inanimate object, a tree stump in the face of with a human face would be the better candidate than a tree stump that yells, I want to take your AR-15s and abortions for everyone. So they decided to run him. And the entire time his campaign, once he got that election, because Clyburn changed vote, the black vote came out really hard for Joe Biden because of that endorsement. It was spread throughout the churches, and then it started to go continue with the narrative of he's the winner, he's the winner, he's the winner constantly in the press, and a sudden ban, because he was so open, talk about this. You can look back and see segments of Cory Booker and Castro, but also news anchors talking about his Joe Biden's problematic stumbles and stuff. Mm-hmm. By the time he was starting to win, Joe Biden came out and said, "I'm not senile. I used to have a stutter." And then anyone who like made fun of him was shamed for stutter shaming, which is just completely insane. Like, how dare you? He started to win. And then they pushed him. And the entire time the election was going on, he didn't come outside. Remember, staff had a rule where they had to keep their masks on. And when they drank a sip of water, had to turn away from him and drink. And by the way, anyone who's had the misfortune of going through COVID with somebody in a nursing home or a hospital facility, you know that like a lack of human interaction leads to significantly more rapid decline. It's really bad for people, to old people, to be alone. So this was going on at the same time. They're not even looking at him with their faces. He's complete. Remember, they're having these weird rallies where he would show up in a car and the other people would be like a half-filled parking lot that would honk their horns. Even the DNC did this. And the entire time, the media ran his campaign for him, a bunker campaign, while constantly reporting that Donald Trump was murdering people every day and you might die of Donald Trump COVID tomorrow. And this warmonger's insane and he's a racist and he hates you and whatever. It was a wild campaign of disinformation from the media, combined with censoring of the Hunter Biden reports, which now it's like literally taken 4chan to release, actual censorship of newspapers, putting down of stories, national security complex coming out against Donald Trump. It was just a full-fledged assault. Molly wrote about it in the book Rigged, with the big tech companies coming in and doing everything they could. And they put this guy in charge. They installed a puppet regime. And it really feels like that, because once you realize that these guys are like 10, 12 years older than the Politburo was, like those old bags of like the old weird men of the Soviet Union, like then you start to realize like, oh my gosh, this is weird. So they might knock him off. They might take him out, get him to resign before.
I was going to say, please clarify what you mean by knock him off.
No. He's not attacking the deep state, and they don't do that since Kennedy. The three presidents who ever went after the deep state, John F. Kennedy, Richard Nixon, Donald Trump.
Mm.
But they don't shoot him anymore.
Oh, my gosh.
Is this recording?
It sure is.
Don't tell the CIA.
I'm sure they're big listeners of Federalist Radio Hour.
Where were we? Oh, yeah. I think that they don't want him to run again, like really clearly. But they're also in a bind because they don't want Kamala Harris to run either, because she is like the least liked person in America.
She is the tree stump.
Yeah, she is. She's really funny, though.
She's the empty Diet Coke can.
She totally is. She's absolutely. So they're stuck in a bind. It's because of a deal they made where they lied to the American people, were willing to do anything they could to get rid of Donald Trump. And now they're stuck with this deal. It puts them in a rough place. So, but the thing is, what I think everyone should try and keep in mind is when Joe Biden's gone, which he will be, the regime that put him in power, that created him, that basically dictates his insane left-wing policies to him, the New York Times, NPR, MSNBC, CNN, Washington Post, these insane left-wing policies come from them too, are amplified by them, that they are the ones who are really in charge, that like the octogenarians white knuckle gripping to the podiums in Washington, D.C. do not have as much power as the corporate media, the big tech, these other aspects of American society, at least to shape Democratic primary politics.
If you're like me, you might be dreading looking at your 401k or IRA account balance lately. You're not alone, and we're hearing all of the experts say there's just no place to hide. But that's simply not true. The truth is you can build a financial bunker that grows and protects your money even during the scariest economic times. The Bank on Yourself Retirement Plan alternative lets you escape the financial carnage and has never had a losing year in over 160 years. Whether you've been investing for years or you're just starting out, now is the time to bypass Wall Street and bank on yourself. Bank on Yourself lets you reach your financial goals and dreams without taking any unnecessary risks. You get guaranteed predictable growth and retirement income with no luck, skill, or guesswork needed. The strategy also lets you take a tax-free retirement income, which protects you from the coming tax tsunami. Unlike a government-controlled 401k, IRA, or similar plan, you control the money in your plan, not the government. You can use the money for any purpose with no questions asked without interrupting the growth of your savings. This is the strategy famous businesses like McDonald's have used when no banker would lend them a dime, and almost anyone can do it. Plus, there's no volatility. Your plan doesn't go backward when the markets tumble. Both your principal and growth are protected. You can get a free report with all the details of how adding Bank on Yourself to your financial plan can help you take back control of your money. Just go to bankonyourself.com/Federalist. That's bankonyourself.com/Federalist. Well, and that's actually a good transition to the flip side of the coin, which is the Republican Party. And Chris and I are, of course, just diehard fans of the GOP. We just we both have tattoos.
I got my Mitch tattoo on my butt.
Yeah, kidding. We have there's no love lost. Let's put it that way. And, you know, there is a flip side to this coin, because when you're talking about the octogenarians white knuckling their podiums here on Capitol Hill, you're also talking about Mitch McConnell. And you're, you know, generally there are polls, by the way, it's we should wrap Trump into this, because there are polls of people who say they don't want Biden or Trump to run again. They want to sort of move on. And Trump himself is old, but he doesn't have the senility that Biden has.
You've seen
obviously.
His rallies. He's quick in his step. And I got news for all those people who say, I don't want them to run. Well, he's going to.
Yeah, he's absolutely running. Barring some major change, he's absolutely running. But Chris, you also wrote about the Republican establishment here in Washington recently, and this was, I thought, just a very, very important article. I want to ask you about the reception that you got to it, but let's just start, if people haven't read it yet, what is the argument you laid out in that article?
Well, Mitch McConnell's bragging openly in the press in a story that came out on July 4th and having his aides plant these stories that he's going to disengage from the culture war. For this next election. He wants to get rid of some of the contentious matters.
They were bragging to NBC News. Bragging. It was like a senior aide with knowledge of Republican leadership was saying,
you know, McConnell's aide.
Yeah, he's like, sometimes you got to take your foot off the gas on the culture war.
Yeah, and it's just really stupid. It's a very, very dumb play by Mitch McConnell. It's not even just because I think, and I do, that the culture war is a very important issue to me and to this country and to our future and our survival. I think all that. But even looking at this just as a cold-blooded politician, which is kind of what Mitch McConnell is, the turtle, is 3 points I made. One, he's got the completely wrong year to disengage from the culture war, because this is not a general election. Most Americans aren't going to vote. If this primary election goes away, every other primary election in history is gone, or every other off-year election in history is gone, then it's going to be a base election, one that's decided by people who are really committed already, Republicans and Democrats who come out and make these calls. What drives Republican voters in these sorts of things? It's the culture war issues. That's the big tent, as you and Inez have said a bunch of times. Those fights about the school things and the transgender stuff, those are the big things that are going to happen. Fights over guns and gun rights, those are things that are really get the base going. Fights over abortion are things that get the base going. Corporate tax rates are not, even though judges might actually play a bigger role now because of Mitch McConnell's play that ended up, I think, despite, I don't think he cared either way, but revoking Dobbs, which has been wonderful. Those are things that really people get folks going. Two, we have the examples of Virginia and Glenn Youngkin. Mm-hmm. Virginia being like a deeply blue-purple state, like leans blue state.
It's blue.
It's basically blue.
It's blue.
It's hard to even call it purple these days. But
that's a blue state.
So how did Glenn Youngkin win? Well, he started off that campaign not leaning into the culture wars at all, taking Jeff Rowe's advice and just trying to keep away from this, the consultant class's advice. I don't want to touch these issues. Remember, he was going around touring with wearing a mask, and his like number one commercial was, we're going to save you money on the grocery tax? Awesome. That's great. 10 cents? Wow.
Well, it's like, hey, my kids are being taught that they're inherent racists and that gender is fluid.
And that's where he took off.
Well, right, but it's like the mentality that somebody is going to want to hear that they're saving money on the grocery tax when actually here, Kamala Harris before she ran for president, when she was in the Senate, you could see her sort of noticing where the political winds were shifting. And she had what she referred to as a 3 a.m. policy. She did a little of this on the campaign trail, but she had been so sort of co-opted by the woke wing that it never really was fully fleshed out. But she at the time was saying Democrats need to let go of identity politics, need to talk about identity politics in a different way, because what keeps people up at 3 in the morning is not, you know, this or that. It's, you know, how am I going to feed my kids? How am I going to, you know, pay the bills, et cetera, et cetera. And yeah, there's truth to that. But at the same time, it's almost also exactly wrong when what people are thinking about is the Democrats' identity politics, right? Because if the identity politics is the left's version of identity politics, it does keep people up at night because it teaches their children with taxpayer money that they are racists and that sex is fluid, and puts them in sports meets and locker rooms with people of the opposite sex when they're 14 years old. So yeah, that does keep people up at night.
12.
Yeah.
Yeah, it does. And when Glenn Youngkin finally leaned into that, he overruled the consultants and went with his with what he was thinking and what some of the members of his team were saying. Well, he won a surprise, like a shocking win for a Republican in Virginia.
Mm-hmm.
This actually changed things. Well, documentary that we filmed out in Loudoun County, the things that we documented out there were real. The parents who we talked to,
not Republicans,
a lot of them had voted
not
for
typical
Barack Obama.
Republicans. Yeah,
a lot of them had people who had voted for Hillary Clinton, and they were suddenly very active because they said, "Why are you teaching race hate to children?" So McConnell's wrong.
Why not?
McConnell's wrong on the year. McConnell's wrong on what's actually even shifting these voters, because the whole idea of this is he wants to reach out to suburban moderate voters who were turned off by Donald Trump.
Mm-hmm.
So he thinks that by taking his pedal off the gas on those things that we just saw in Virginia changed the election to a Republican.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to help. It doesn't seem to make sense. And the Republicans we've seen in some of the special elections too previously who ignored the culture issues ended up getting smoked, ending up getting defeated. So he's wrong on that. And then there's also this weird kind of realization, third, amongst a lot of voters and a lot of people, that seemed like there was conflict everywhere when Donald Trump was president.
Because
he was fighting with Major League Baseball and sports, Hollywood, big business, the Chinese, European Union, wokeness in the military, Congress, the activists, the environmentalists. It seemed like it was just combat and arguments everywhere, like what's going on?
Right.
Okay, well, then Donald Trump left office. He's gone. And none of it has stopped. None of it has let up. The constant advance in the teachers' unions from Hollywood, the gay activist stuff in Hollywood, like the culture war stuff has continued in every single aspect of our society. So it turns out, which we used to talk about back in the day, it isn't Donald Trump causing this conflict.
Yeah. It's the left.
Yeah. So it's not like it's 1981 and the argument is whether or not we should shut down gay bars. Now it's like the culture war is not an offensive war by the right. It's a completely defensive war. This is the equivalent of culture war left-wing soldiers marching through Washington, D.C. and Mitch McConnell saying, well, I think we're going to disengage from this issue. There's no disengaging. It's either fight or surrender. So we don't actually have a choice on any of these issues. And that's, I think, the third thing that these dumb Republican leaders are just not
highly
getting.
Paid. These dumb, highly compensated.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I mean,
consultants.
Well, the consultants just don't care. I mean, a mutual friend of ours who's a consultant gets made fun of because he actually has political beliefs. He's like, he gets really serious. He gets worked up about things like abortion and stuff. And the other Republican consultants are like, oh my gosh, dude, what do you care about this? Like, yeah. Come on. And you can see it from like which ones got paid better at CNN or MSNBC to attack the GOP during the Trump years.
Yep.
Like, or which one's going to leave the party for which amount of money. You get a good feeling. Or that great article that just came out in National Review about Alyssa Farah that's like not anything new, but it's just a perfect documentation of how every single public position she's ever had, she's reversed like in the last couple of months because of a television contract. It's impressive that the level that a lot of these folks in D.C. are willing to go. But I think that Mitch McConnell just doesn't get it. I mean, the culture war is here. We can't disengage.
Well,
they're coming.
Well, so that's absolutely true. And we can address their counter argument easily because they're saying, listen, the economy is so bad that anything that distracts voters from the Republican position on Joe Biden's economy is only going to hurt, and especially on a sort of broader level, anytime you get Republicans talking about ending exceptions for rape or incest when it comes to abortion, anytime, you know, when you have most of the public at least supportive just of those first trimester abortions, but you have Republicans talking, you know, about why they oppose it, why they oppose exceptions, Republicans talking in, you know, terms the Republican consultant class is uncomfortable with when it comes to sex and gender and LGBT ideas, or immigration, whatever it is, especially immigration, actually, they say that is not worth it in an economy like this, which sucks for the American people, but is great for Republicans to run on. And that misses everything you just said, Chris, but it also is like the reason we're fighting so that women don't sit in prison next to men, or let's actually use a much better example, women aren't in domestic abuse shelters next to men. The reason we even have to have this asinine conversation is because you took your foot off the damn gas for decades and you didn't treat this as serious as it was.
That's right, for our country.
Right.
A threat to our people, a threat to our nation. I mean, right now you've got multiple Republican senators who are ready to vote for a defense authorization bill that will draft women into the military.
Mm-hmm.
Like, who are okay with it. Just saying, oh yeah, sure, we're going to back this. That's why you can't take this at face value. One, I think he's wrong on what gets the voters going. Yes, the economy, for sure. But this is a base election.
In a bad economy, yes.
In a bad economy, yeah. Yes. But this is a base election, so you want to get the things that get people really fired up. Like, you don't have to write the campaign ads and take the stances that inflation is bad in mm-hmm. order to still run on that. But exactly what you're talking about is Republicans aren't particularly well-trained at national level to talk about these issues like abortion, these difficult and issues that where there's a lot of sadness involved. Republicans are very bad at talking about this. The average retired businessman who becomes a congressman or a senator lacks the vocabulary to deal with this correctly and to turn it back on them. They get stuck down in the nuance. But Donald Trump gave a master class on how to talk about it when he went at Hillary Clinton in Nevada and said, you know what this is, people? Just kind of turn to the audience. Do you know what she's talking about? They want to take the baby out when it's alive
mm-hmm.
and kill it. And he starts just going through what late-term abortion is. And she just keeps on shaking her head and saying, it's a very sad, hardest decision a woman will ever make. And he's like, you're killing the baby.
Yep.
And just goes through it with that. But Republicans, consultants, and think tanks have to work on this, need to really train up the members of the national GOP to be able to talk about these issues. Like,
can I make a quick point on that before we move on? Because it reminds me of what I've seen people talking about the war on women from 2012. And I do think a lot
remember
of
that.
Yeah, you had Todd Akin talking about legitimate rape, and you had, I forget what the other one was, and they said, you know, Mitt Romney had binders full of women because he said that, and they made it sound like it was objectifying and misogynistic, et cetera, et cetera.
That was a weak point.
And Republicans crumbled under the pressure and were immediately took this defensive posture, handled it so poorly. And I do think a lot of people, especially in the consultant class and Republican leadership, have a form of like political PTSD from that. They are terrified that this post-Roe midterm election cycle in an economy that sucks for everyone, but especially Democrats in this political context, they are terrified that that's what's about to happen. And they will be furious. And that's what this, I think, NBC News story where you had the pretty clearly seemed to be a McConnell aide saying, you know, you got to take
your
foot off.
Definitely a McConnell aide. That was a McConnell story from start to finish.
Yeah.
I get that fear, but you got to keep in mind that this was a candidate, Mitt Romney, of the consultant business class who didn't care at all about the issues that most Republican voters actually deal with and are motivated by, and it was pretending, running against one of the canniest politicians and liars we've seen in modern American politics,
mm-hmm.
Barack Obama,
mm-hmm.
During a time when the culture war was simply abortion versus Roe v. Wade and gay marriage,
mm-hmm.
and which is something that I think the right didn't fight the way it should have on, and didn't fight right on. Nowadays, we have a doddering, senile man with an idiot vice president who just can't even sing words together in a coherent way because she doesn't understand the subject she's talking about. Like, literally, her staff say they cannot get her to do the research, which is why she always sounds like she's giving a book report in a book she didn't read.
Cancel culture is coming to your bank, and holding the wrong political views might soon leave you out in the cold. I'm Bill Walton. On the latest episode of The Bill Walton Show, Todd Zwicky, Paul Watkins, and I discuss what is already happening, how the Biden administration is already pursuing this agenda, and what we can do about it. This progressive culture offensive is relentless. It's coming for you, and you won't hear about this anywhere else. Follow The Bill Walton Show at Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I don't know why you would say that when we have this wonderful quote from her on space, that I'm going to read it because...
All right, pull that up.
Yeah, so I don't know why you would say it sounds like she doesn't do the research when she has insights like this. Space is exciting. It spurs our imaginations, and it forces us to ask big questions. Space, it affects us all, and it connects us all. Space is exciting.
You all know the kid in class, or like everyone knew hadn't done the homework, just like giving the presentation. That's exactly her.
This is just so funny. The significance of the passage of time, right? The significance of the passage of time. So when you think about it, there is a great significance to the passage of time. There is such great significance to the passage of time.
You just have this on your Instagram?
No, the Federalist posted an Instagram of 10, like, Kamala Harris quotes on motivational poster format.
Oh, I want to print that. We can do
this
for the office.
Did you just say you want to print that?
Yeah, print those.
Oh, Chris is sort of known around the team as being, like, the old man who needs to print out his emails. And so I thought he meant he was going to print out an Instagram post. And
anyone who gets stuck there, getting bogged down in their morning alerts, if you print out the first 10 things you need to do in the day, and there's no one G-chatting you and Signal messaging you and Apple messaging you or whatever, instant messaging you on AIM, then it's a lot easier to get through your day because your computer's entire job is to distract you. So
well,
just get the stuff you need done.
I don't disagree with that at all. I'm just going to read one more for the sake of posterity.
And you can print posters.
Yeah. I thought you meant you were going to print like an Instagram screenshot, which I know people who have done, and they may or may not be my mom. I think that there can be no higher priority than what we have been clear is our highest priority. The woman says nothing. But this, Chris, gets to kind of what you were talking about on a more serious note in terms of Biden being foisted on us and Kamala Harris. The reason you're starting to see this seep into the media is because Kamala Harris is so useless as a politician.
Yeah. And you got this.
They're like, we need to figure something out because it shouldn't be her either.
We've got our fake elite American historians like Doris Kearns Goodwin and John Meacham coming out and saying, this is FDR. Joe Biden is FDR, and he's going to heal the soul of our nation. Which, by the way, makes me like now distrust like every history book I've ever read by them. Like, how can I trust you on John Adams if you're so wrong on something that's like living right in front of you?
Well, because John Adams isn't around to ingratiate themselves with.
Yeah, maybe that. Yeah. Maybe they can be trusted on that. But this guy's not even Bill Clinton. Like, there's no way he could do this without the media's help. And the media has obviously made it clear that they're no longer going to help him because he's no longer useful to them. Now he's become a liability. Now we need a new person. They did that with Kamala right away. They basically neutered her right away from being able to take power because they've never really been good to her because she's a bad and stupid person. It's kind of indefensible.
The glossy magazines were very good to her during the primary.
During the primary, sure.
Yeah.
And of course you got like...
Which is funny because she didn't even get to Iowa despite having all of the coverage of the glossy magazines, celebrity support. It was there.
And then they had the knit artwork down that we covered it for the Federalists down by the waterfront in D.C. But...
That's right. We did. And then your car broke down.
Yo, that was a Range Rover. That's what happens. When you drive true old-fashioned trucks... There isn't really a stuck in a bind here, and the Republicans are the ones who are able to screw this up. So if Mitch McConnell goes in and he's because Barack Obama beat Mitt Romney, he says what his response is: we need to run exactly like you mentioned earlier. We need to openly and nakedly run the 2012 campaign strategy that he's got PTSD from. Because I mean that's what they did in 2012. They didn't talk about the. The closest they got to was, I'm severely conservative. Corporations are people too, my friend. These are the things that Mitt Romney did, and they're trying to repeat that because they have PTSD from Todd Akin. I can't possibly buy that level of cowardice from them. Our Republican leadership needs to step up to this moment And all they'll ever want to do is step away. They don't want to fight on immigration. They don't talk about abortion. They don't want to talk about marriage. Heck no.
This is their fig leaf, right? This is their fig leaf. It's like, well, gosh, we have no reason to talk about the culture war issues right now because the economy is reasonably so the focus of every single voter. Mm-hmm. And so it gives them an excuse.
It's an election year or next year is an election year. I'd love to, but next year is an election year.
Yep.
I mean, okay, there's elections every 2 years.
Next year is an election year, and that is exactly the excuse that has kept this perpetuating this cycle that's left us in a place where there are men and women's locker rooms, and it's a partisan debate, and it's not even something the conservative party theoretically can unanimously say is absolutely full stop wrong and insane.
This shows a weakness of our national politicians.
Absolutely.
We need a better party.
No, it shows a weakness of the culture, fundamentally, that we are so postmodern and morally relativistic that not even the conservative party, theoretically, the conservative party in name, has the will to go full in on these issues.
But it's been getting better in some ways. Like mm-hmm, the people mm-hmm. candidates have been coming up. And the American cultural right has been winning a lot of victories recently. Great victories. Partially with the secularization of a language while still talking about a very important thing that's not secular. It reminds me of a friend of mine who goes into schools and helps in gives conversations to try and de-escalate conflict and violence to avert suicides and school shootings. He goes in there with an extremely biblical message, mm-hmm. but doesn't, and he even like nearly quotes Christ multiple times, but he doesn't actually mention Christ. He doesn't give the exact quote, and he's able to give these excellent points without actually turning people off and being, oh, okay, this is Christian stuff. And the culture war has shifted. The warriors have shifted in a very intelligent way over the past 2 years, where you notice if during the Dobbs debate, during some of the marriage stuff that's starting to crop back up, during the fights over the transgender and the culture wars, there have been very few appeals to God made Adam and Eve, made man. It's even though, by the way, that's completely true. The way that they're appealing to it is this aspect or that aspect, the abuse factors, the child's life. And it's something that's been, I think, a lot more people turn off because we're a fallen people. People turn off when they hear Christian thoughts and they say, oh, okay, he's just preaching to me. You can make these points very easily without that because the facts back up every aspect of that. And that's allowed, I think, us to reach more people and to change more minds without them turning off. And it's a sad thing that we have to, that we can't be open and talking about the actual Christian roots of this, but I'm happy if we can at least get the message out there and defend the kids. One thing I'm kind of worried about, though, I think Republicans fighting the transgender stuff based on women's sports is just weak sauce.
No, I agree completely.
Same thing with like fighting to defend guns because of sportsmen. It's mm-hmm. like, no, come on, guys. Guns are part of the Constitution for us to defend ourselves and our family.
But
and I love hunting. And women are men. It's like it's more important than like the very modern invention of women's sports in America.
Mm-hmm. So I definitely consider my incessant skepticism both a blessing and a curse. It's a blessing in journalism for sure. But as I've watched all of these MyPillow ads over the years, I have just been plagued by the question, are these as good as the commercials say they are? I've always wondered this. And when the fine folks over at MyPillow were kind enough to send me some of their products, I was really pleasantly surprised. These things are great. And right now they're having a BOGO extravaganza. So you can get buy one, get one free price on the MyPillow bed sheets as low as $59.98, the Elegance MyPillows as low as $49.98, and that six-piece towel sets. Those are my favorite. Those are included in the BOGO extravaganza. Also, the Roll and Go Anywhere MyPillows for $29.98 and so much more. Those six-piece towel sets are made with cotton grown here in the United States. Other towels feel good but don't absorb, or they absorb but they don't feel good. Every MyPillow towel is made from proprietary technology that makes them highly absorbent and soft to the touch. I can confirm that. It's absolutely true. Like I said, these are my favorites. They have no lotion-y feel either. Every set comes with two bath towels, two hand towels, and two washcloths, so you got everything you need. They're available in a variety of colors and sizes, and they are machine washable and come with a 60-day money-back guarantee and a one-year limited warranty. Those roll-and-go-anywhere MyPillows, you can use them on your couch, your recliner, or in your car. They're versatile enough to on vacation, or really anywhere you go. They're also available in multiple colors and patterns and machine washable and dryable for all you parents. That's the most important part. They come with a 10-year warranty and a 60-day money-back guarantee as well. So as you can see, it's a buy one, get one extravaganza over at MyPillow.com/Federalist. Bed sheets and MyPillows are just the tip of the iceberg. Find the full list of BOGO offers by visiting MyPillow.com/Federalist or call 800-794-8429. Stock up with buy one, get one free savings today and get Mike's book free with any purchase. MyPillow.com/Federalist or call 800-794-8429. MyPillow.com/Federalist. Well, this is, yeah, that's true. But this gets to a dynamic that's important, which is that we are in a race against time. Like, we are in a race for the country's survival. Like, we have tech barons talking to major churches about moving worship services into the metaverse, bragging about it.
If you want to take all the Unitarians into the metaverse, go right
no,
ahead.
No. This is Hillsong. And, you know, I think we all have many problems with Hillsong at the Federalist, but it's a big church. And when you have, you know, that level, this was in 2020, by the way, but we're like the boiling frogs, right? Like, we're not going to know we're about to be scalded until we're scalded, because the water is just being turned up incrementally.
Curmudgeonly old men like me have been screaming that we're being scalded.
But this
you
is
make
the thing.
Fun of me.
Yeah, no, but the but people who were saying that in 2012 and during the Tea Party years, who said this Tea Party is not just about fiscal conservatism. This is about our culture. This is about our way of life. You know what show was like most popular during those years? Freaking Duck Dynasty.
Oh, uh-huh. Okay.
If you think about it, it makes a lot of sense, because it was this time where people on a kind of bipartisan basis were saying they were manifesting the coming apart friction that Charles Murray documented and that Donald Trump also like showed very clearly. This is not it is not moral to say we will get to this, elect us, and we will use our power to fight the culture war. We're just not going to talk about it during the campaign season, because they have been doing that for decades. They have been telling conservatives who were screaming about what was happening on college campuses. They weren't taking them seriously, but they were saying, you give us the power of the purse. You give us Congress. You give us this. What have they done? NAFTA. They've done all of these deals business-wise that are great for the corporate class in America. They will do Donald Trump, the host of Celebrity Apprentice, beats the former Secretary of State in a presidential race on a populist platform, and they pass corporate tax cuts. They pass a tax bill first and foremost, do nothing first and foremost. They eventually did other things on the cultural level, and there were some things they did right away, like rolling back the Title IX guidelines, but their priority was clearly tax cuts. And do I think those tax cuts benefited the middle class? Absolutely. Do I think corporate tax cuts are good and do benefit the middle class? Absolutely. But it's a matter of priorities. And if you're never going to do things for the culture, because you're going to act like you can't walk and chew gum at the same time, because you just have to do another tax cut bill. You just have to do another business-friendly bill, another bill that's good for China. You just never do anything. That's what you end up doing. And that's how you end up with men in women's locker rooms.
Yeah. And that's where the GOP has led us. So, I mean, I guess to kind of wrap up the two places where they align is that the New York Times and the media have decided Biden's no longer useful to them. He's a candidate who can't run. And the only people right now who really could defeat us are the GOP.
Mm-hmm.
So if Mitch McConnell wants to disengage, if Donald Trump wants to make this election about himself, those are different things that or just different factors are starting to come in where it's like, this is your hand to lose now, guys, mm-hmm. to the right. Let's see if they screw it up. But I'm still kind of confident, you know.
He's feeling good. Wow, it's weird for you.
Definitely in the House of Representatives. I'm not confident it's going to change the country.
Oh,
I just think they're going to get some electoral gains.
Yeah.
Maybe not the Senate, but we'll see.
And, you know, I do think, you know, if you look at the way, like, Romney McDaniel and the RNC, like, they pulled out of the Presidential Debate Commission. Like, they have been pretty...
They didn't celebrate Pride Month.
Doesn't sound right to me.
The RNC didn't do a single Pride Month event or tweet this year. Because they were taken to the woodshed so hard last year.
That doesn't sound right to me.
We counted it down at the Federalist. I was like, we have 6 hours left for the RNC to send out a rainbow tweet in June. And it passed.
All right. Well, see, the Chris Bedford effect is real. It's absolutely real. So, Chris, thank you so much for breaking down both of these articles. You can go ahead and read them at the Federalist. Once again, senior editor at the Federalist, Christopher Bedford, also a co-founder over at RightForge.
Thanks for having me.
Anytime, Chris. Actually, that's not true.
See you next week.
Not anytime. Sometimes I say no.
Not yet.
Not yet. Well, no, I did. No, I did last week. Anyway, all that is to say, you've been listening to another edition of the Federalist Radio Hour. We'll be back soon with more. Until then, be lovers of freedom and anxious for the fray.